Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guests on today's podcast are my friends Regina Pistilli and Chuck Clark. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Regina and Chuck will tell us a story that I'll let them tell, but it's this wonderful partnership coming together, even though there's differences in our faith and our sexual orientation, to find common ground and working together for common causes. So it's a wonderful podcast, and I think you'll enjoy it. But Chuck, will you take a second and just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Certainly. I'm Chuck Clark. My wife, Elaine, and I have been married for 39 years and have lived in the Salt Lake Avenues neighborhood that entire time. We have four children. They're all grown. They've all produced grandchildren.
How many grandchildren do you have?
Let's see. We have 11.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And they're all good kids, having some of their own challenges, which, you know.
We all do.
We all do. But we've been very blessed to have a beautiful family and to be able to live in the Avenues neighborhood our entire married life.
Tell us your faith for our listeners.
I'm a mainstream member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I was all 16 of my great-great-grandparents crossed the plains, and 22 of my 32 third great-grandparents either crossed the plains or died in the process.
Wow.
So I am very steeped in the faith and in the history, in the legacy of it. I was born in Provo. I grew up in a ward that was on a bench, and all of the homes on that bench were within the ward boundary. There were only five families of other faiths within the entire ward boundary, and I didn't even know that until I ran into one of the children of one of those families who was my age, and he became a dear friend of mine. But at age five, I learned that not everyone in the world was of my faith.
Some of us don't learn that even at age five.
Yeah.
We're going to come back to more of your story. That helps just to set a foundation, Chuck. Regina, welcome.
Thank you.
Will you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes. So I moved to Salt Lake City about 2.5 years ago, and I lived in Maine for about 20 years before that, and I pretty much grew up in Boulder, Colorado. I'm the oldest daughter of Marie and Pat Pistilli, and I have two younger sisters, and I'm going to be a great aunt soon, and I have two godsons.
Welcome to Salt Lake City.
Thank you.
That's a big difference from Chuck and I.
I live right across from Chuck and Elaine. I was very blessed to have landed right across from them because they are dear people, and
And what, will you share your faith? What faith are you for?
I was raised Catholic, mm-hmm. and still practice Catholicism, along with some, I've studied a lot of other religions as well, Eastern religions.
And one of the parts of this story with Chuck and Regina is Chuck is a typical straight married Mormon man, and you're Catholic, and you're not straight. Will you share a little bit about that with our listeners?
I just laughed because I think this is the only circumstance in which I haven't come out in the 30. I've been out for 36 years. I came out when I was 22, and I'm 58 now. And when I came out, I just decided I was not going to be closeted. I was going to be respectful, but I was going to be clear about who I was with people. And I believed that that was the way to change hearts and minds from the very start. And I believe that's proved itself to be true. I've never encountered a case where that's not.
You've never come out on radio before.
But never come out on the radio before.
Well, thanks. And do you identify as gay or lesbian? Do you take on a label, or how do you navigate that?
Either one of those words is fine with me. Okay. I'll often use the word queer, actually.
Help our listeners understand why that's an appropriate word.
Well, because it's not gendered. And it's a way of taking back a word that when I was younger was slung at me in hate, and it sort of it takes away that hate. It sort of de-escalates that word and makes it something that I can say, yeah, I'm queer. And it's also, I like the way it looks. I'm a poet and a writer, and so I like the double E's. It just is
That's cool.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, I love these kind of podcasts where Chuck and Regina have, on the surface, very little in common. You grew up in different parts of the world. You're one of you are male, one of you are female, one of you are LDS, one of you are Catholic. And this is a podcast about how we can find common ground and the great work that you did together. So, Chuck, you are serving in the ward of the stake, and you get called to do an assignment. Will you walk our listeners through the church assignment you got?
Be happy to. It was in the middle of July of 2017, so just a little over a year ago. The stake president and his counselor came to our home, and we invited them in, Elaine and I, and the four of us sat in the living room, and after a little bit of chit-chat, President Scott Pickett, wonderful guy, said, we are here to call you to serve as the chairman of the Stake Float Committee and to build a float for the Days of 47 parade. My wife, Elaine, later told me that she was trying to contain her laughter because I had always told her that I would never build a float for the Days of 47 parade.
That's a scary assignment for me, too. I think I'd feel the same way.
And the reason why I didn't want to build a float for the Days of 47 parade is because I've felt that that parade in particular has been not a uniting influence in our community. And Elaine and I have worked so hard in our 39 years to open our minds and to learn about our neighbors and to include people and to not create divisions and not exacerbate any existing divisions. I just didn't want to get involved in that. And so I said to President Pickett, this is really not something that I want to do. It's the antithesis of what I'm trying to do as a faithful member of the church who's simply trying to create good and do many things of my own free will. And as I expressed that to him, I had a thought. And that thought was, I think I could do this. I think I could feel good about doing this if it were a community project and not a church project. And so I said to him, I'll give you an option here. I do not want a calling. And I don't want to build a stake float, but if you would consider letting me volunteer as a community volunteer and make this a community project, I'll do it. And he said, that's a great idea. Let me see what I can do. He then went away, and about a week later, contacted me and said, I've got clearance for you from the Days of 47 committee and from the church liaison to make this a community float. And then we talked about what that meant. One of the things that meant was that on the float, it wasn't going to say the name of the stake. It was going to say the name of the community, Salt Lake Avenue's community. And I would involve as many people outside of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as I possibly could. and that they would be not only volunteers building the float, but they would be part of the committee to envision what we would do. And President Pickett was fully supportive of that vision.
Wow. And then that's just unique, and I think our listeners are getting more of a feeling for who you are, and that you look through everything on the sense, what in our doctrine can we use to bring people together, and even sensitive to a wonderful parade like the Days of 47 does. It's hard for some members of our community because it may not feel their voices are equally valued or they're a part of that, even though we love that parade. And so I think it's just wonderful for our listeners to get a little feel for you and your sensitivity for that. So talk about how you found members of for your parade committee and how you reached out to Regina. And I'm not sure I'm calling it the right thing, the parade committee or the steering committee.
Well, let's call it the float committee.
The float committee.
The float planning committee.
Okay.
Regina was the first person that I talked to, and it was sometime later. I don't really think it was in the middle of the summer, but
I think it was early winter.
Yeah. So I approached Regina one day. You know, we live right across the street, so I saw her outside, and I said, "Hey, I've got this opportunity to take a church thing and turn it into a community thing. It's a float for the Pioneer Day Parade. You want to help? Want to help me?" And she said, "Yeah, I'll do that."
Now, did you know Regina was gay and was a Catholic? So she was different, you know, she was different than you.
Oh, of course. Elaine and I got acquainted with Regina as soon as she moved into the neighborhood. And she was open with us, and we were open with her, and we love Regina. She's an integral part of our street. It wouldn't be the community that it is, the beautiful community that it is, without Regina. And we have a very diverse set of people on the street. So,
what in your background, because a lot of Latter-day Saints might have stepped back from being a friend to Regina once they knew that she wasn't of her faith and was gay. What in your background said, well, that doesn't change anything. I'm still going to be Regina's friend, and she's worthy of my friendship.
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, I'm 62 years old, and I already described the insular environment that I grew up in. I think what really changed me was living in the Avenues. When Elaine and I met, we were living singly in the Avenues, and we married and made our home there. And what I realized is that we were part of a minority. For the very first time in my life, I was in the religious minority in the Avenues. And so we had to make a conscious decision to reach out and to be open and to get to know our neighbors, because we weren't going to get to know them all at church, right?
Oh.
They weren't going to all be there. And that's the first time in my life where I'd lived in a place, other than as a missionary, that I was in the religious minority. So as we got to know our neighbors, we started to hear two themes. Neighbors of other faiths almost uniformly respected the church because of the good things that it does. But they would also resent some of the church's policies. And then there were two kinds of experiences that we heard over and over and over. Some neighbors would tell us that either they, when they were growing up in Utah, in Salt Lake City in particular, were excluded from children's birthday parties or from dating. And others would express that they had felt like targets of proselyting all their lives. And we felt hurt about that. We Elaine and I felt that pain of our neighbors, and we gradually just developed this perspective that we never wanted to add to that, and we wanted to help mitigate it as much as possible. So it really was just a result of living with these wonderful people of all different faiths, or no faith in particular, who were our neighbors in that beautiful Avenues community. And I'm grateful that I've lived my life there. It's changed how I see the world.
That's beautiful. Tell us, our listeners, I think you were a bishop in the Avenues. Tell us some of the things you did as a bishop to try to create a feeling of inclusivity. And if that's a word, is that a word, listeners, inclusivity?
I think so.
I've been accused of making up words. Regina's giving me the thumbs up. What did you do? And then I want to have Regina share some thoughts. But what did you do as a bishop that you wanted for this feeling to be implemented?
Elaine and I have lived at four different addresses in the Avenues. And each time we moved, the farthest we ever moved was five blocks. The last move that we made, we moved from one ward into another. And we went to I think this was in 1994, and we went to the first ward activity that happened after we moved in. It was called the Ward Breakfast, and it was held in a park just outside of the ward boundary. And about 30 people attended, and they were all members of the ward. And I distinctly remember turning to Elaine. I remember exactly where I was standing in that park, and I said, "This doesn't feel right. This ought to be held inside the neighborhood, and it ought to be a neighborhood event. This doesn't feel right to be a community breakfast of 30 people outside the neighborhood." Well, over time, I served as a counselor in the bishopric and had an opportunity to start to make that change. And I was able to influence bringing that event inside the neighborhood. And we held it on the street, nowhere near the chapel. It still started with an opening prayer, and the ward budget paid for all of the expenses. We invited all of our neighbors, but a lot of people saw it as a Mormon thing and chose not to come. But when I was called to serve as bishop in 2003, we made this a community event. We used some ward budget to go buy some coffee at Einstein's. We decided we wouldn't start with an opening prayer. And we made a donation box available at each end of the street so that anyone who wanted to contribute could feel like they were a part of it. I got some pushback from some of the ward members about having coffee at the so-called ward breakfast. And in fact, I remember the stake auditors came in that fall and looked through the books, and one of them walked into the bishop's office with this paperwork and said, "What's this $75 for coffee?"
That's awesome.
I said, "Well, that's missionary work." That's loving your neighbor. So that event from that point on really became a neighborhood event. And it took about 5 years for some of my neighbors to really trust that it was a neighborhood event and that it didn't have an agenda of missionary work. But it now has, and now we've been doing this, for almost 15 years. 14 years, I guess. But it is truly a neighborhood event. It has it attracts about 350 people. I don't think I know half of them.
That's really cool.
We keep getting more coffee and more bacon every year because we keep running out. It pays for itself. The donations always exceed the costs.
Interesting.
And I organize it as an individual. It's not organized as a ward activity. People from the ward help. They volunteer, but there are as many volunteers who are from the neighborhood as there are from the ward. It's magical. Mm-hmm. Regina is one of those.
I love that story. That's a great story for our listeners. And I love where there's, I sometimes look at decisions based on principles. So there's this principle of wanting to create community, love, and understanding, which is a doctrine of Christ. And then coffee drinking is outside of our doctrine. And so it's sort of like, what are we going to do here? And I love that sort of you balance those two principles. So the principle of community and bringing people together in love and understanding, you know, sort of is what our goal here is. And we can let people, another principle is just agency. We can let people, they can go to get coffee here or they can get at the store. It's not going to increase coffee consumption.
Right.
But it's just, and it's probably a message that everybody's welcome.
That's exactly what it is.
And
for many people,
that's a gospel principle too.
For many people, breakfast isn't breakfast if it doesn't have coffee.
Yeah.
And I look at the word of wisdom in a practical way. I do not dispute that drinking coffee makes one unworthy to hold a temple recommend. But if you look at all of the prohibited substances in the word of wisdom, they run a spectrum from coffee and tea at one end to meth and heroin at the other. And coffee and tea are legal.
Yeah.
They don't have social costs. They don't break up families. They don't create addictions that ruin people's lives. And there are some people in the medical community who claim that there are benefits, health benefits. On the other end of the spectrum, you know, there's no doubt. And but
that's very helpful.
It just seems like if this is something that's important to my neighbors, and they're, other than being against a rule in our church, against a doctrine, there's no other reason for people not to participate in that, why not? It's just not a problem to me.
I love that, and I love it. It just gives people a chance to think about that and what they would do and how we could potentially bring people together. So, Regina, and we know that your voice isn't 100%, but so far you've sounded great. Tell us your, just give us a little bit of background on your relationship with Chuck and his wife, Elena, I believe.
Elaine.
And then this invitation to be part of this community float.
Yeah. So the thing that strikes me about Chuck's story so far is when, after he invited me to be part of the Community Float committee, he asked me to go to the first organizational meeting for the Float Builders. And before, on the way there, he said to me, you know, I love my faith, and I love my community, I love my neighbors, and I'm not going to choose. I don't need to choose between those two things. I can love my faith, and I can love my neighbors. And that, to me, characterizes Chuck and Elaine as neighbors. I don't feel like, in fact, on the way over, we had a conversation about Mormon doctrine and sort of a Catholic principle. It's not really, we don't call them doctrines, we don't call it, but a Catholic teaching is really what it would be. And, you know, we're always sort of going, well, how does this work in your church? Well, how does it work in your church? And it becomes a beautiful ecumenical exchange. And in fact, after we, when we first went to the meeting, where was it, Chuck? In West Jordan?
Yeah, Kearns, I think, somewhere out there.
So it was
by Nevada.
As we walked in, he said to me, "Regina, I'm just warning you, this is going to be a big dose of Mormon culture." And I said, "Okay, Chuck, no big deal." And we sat down, and the committee was it was a council room. So the committee was in this semicircle up high. I felt like it was like a little bit like being in the Supreme Court or something. And we started with a prayer, and each committee member in turn got up and told float stories. And they were all very moved. They had spiritual experiences building these floats. And I was very moved. I thought, my goodness, if we started more projects with a spiritual mindset and then we would actually recognize what a miracle it is that we are here working together and that we managed to manifest these beautiful gifts together. So I left the meeting and Chuck said, well, what'd you think? And I said, well, I thought it was beautiful. And he said, how'd you get to think like that? And I said, my mother, she was very ecumenical. He said, well, what does that mean? How did she behave in an ecumenical way? And I said, well, whenever she met someone new, she would ask them something deep and real about themselves, deep and real about their faith. And she would listen and learn, and they would feel heard, and there would be real communion there.
Tell us your mother's name.
Marie,
and how is she gone?
She is. She died 3 years ago.
3 years ago. That's wonderful things that she taught. What an interesting experience. And I sort of want to be in your shoes walking in that building and seeing that through your eyes. Thank you for sharing that and seeing the goodness in that experience. Maybe some things that were a little unsettling. I don't know if anybody said anything that felt us versus them or you felt on the margins or if it was just a completely good experience.
I looked really different from most of the people in the room. Wouldn't you say that's true, Chuck?
Yeah, oh, maybe a little.
So now I'm going to bounce ahead. We're going to bounce around this podcast. I want our listeners, and we can come back to tell more about the float, the theme, and some of the stories, but eventually the float came and went, and then the idea came, and I believe this was after the parade actually happened, of Chuck having Regina speak in your local LDS congregation about the float experience. Was that after the float?
It was. A member of the bishopric asked me if I would speak in a sacrament meeting about building bridges. He said, that's the topic, building bridges. We'd like you to share some of your experiences. And as I'm inclined to do, I thought, well, who else can I involve in this? And my ward, I love my ward members, and they're wonderful people, but I think a lot of them are tired of hearing me talk about building bridges. They're tired of hearing about the neighborhood breakfast and the float and lots of other things that Elaine and I do. And so I pondered it and came to a conclusion that it would be much more effective in communicating how the bridges were built and what they meant if I was not the only member of the float organizing committee that was speaking. And since there were 10 people on that committee, and 6 of them were not Latter-day Saints, one of those being Regina, I just polled the committee to see who would be willing to speak. And Regina and Dave Alderman, I think he's a Methodist, were the ones whose calendars aligned with the opportunity to speak and said yes. There were 2 others, one who's a former member of the church and another who grew up ethnically Jewish but describes himself as an atheist. That would have spoken had it worked with their schedules.
Wow, that's really cool.
So I went to the bishop, and I told him this line of thinking, and he said, I think that's a good idea. And he went to President Scott Pickett, and President Pickett was enthusiastically supportive of this. So I nailed down the plans with both Dave and Regina. Made some suggestions of how to approach it. Talked to him a little bit about how the meeting works. The stake president and the bishop had already asked me to please invite them and any of their neighbors, any of our neighbors who came, who were of other faiths, to feel free to partake of the sacrament if they were Christian and they believe in Christ. And so we really tried to just get everybody comfortable. And the three of us spoke.
What was the order?
I spoke first. Dave was next, and then Regina was the final speaker.
So if I had walked into this room, I would have seen all three of you up there on the stand, the three yes. speakers from the float committee, the leadership committee all speaking. So,
and there were a good 20 people in the congregation who were not members of the church.
I just wish I were at this meeting. I wish everybody in the church could be at this meeting. What a beautiful chance just to hear from fellow members of the community.
It was such a beautiful, indescribably beautiful experience to feel the Holy Ghost there, to know that all of the people in that room were feeling that spirit. I was sitting next to Regina. We were feeling the same thing. It was really amazing.
So Regina, walk us through how you accepted this invitation, and then would you give us your talk?
I would love to. Well, I mentioned that I'm a poet and a writer, and you only have to ask a poet and a writer once if they want to write something and talk, and they say yes, because we don't get very many opportunities to write and talk, and certainly not a lot of opportunities to write and talk about spiritual matters. You know, as a Catholic, it's rare to have this kind of an opportunity because the priests actually speak after the gospel. You know, sometimes at weddings or at funeral masses, lay people speak and make offerings, but we don't speak at our sacrament masses, lay people. So I was thrilled at this unique opportunity, and also I really wanted to see and feel what a LDS mass felt like. Well, I use the word mass.
That's
it's
great.
A service.
That's fine.
That's great.
You know, I have an enormous amount of respect for faith, people of faith, but in particular, seeing how closely knit the LDS community is and how much their faith holds them in difficulties in life. And so I really wanted to understand more about it myself. So.
So now you're the last speaker. We may have Chuck give his talk or give parts of it after yours, but there's been two talks. Now it's your turn. You're getting ready to stand up. You're walking to the podium.
Right. I actually, during the opening parts of the service, said some very deep prayers because I'm not typically a front of the house person, and I have in the past been very shaky. You can hear it in my voice when I'm up in front of a large group of people, and this was a large group of people. So I said some deep prayers that the Holy Spirit came to me and gave me the strength to deliver this message that I felt like I had been given. You know, writers, whenever they write something, whenever you hear this over and over again, it doesn't quite feel, if it comes out good, it doesn't really feel like you. It feels like you're an instrument for something much greater. So President Pickett actually was sitting in front of me, and the bishop, because is that how all churches are? They have the...
Yeah, they got several rows behind the pulpit, and the presiding authorities sit on the first row.
Right. So I thanked him first and the bishop for allowing me to speak. In Chuck's invitation to participate in this meeting today, he shared the intent was, quote, to illustrate that the unconditional love and inclusion fostered by the Community Float Project is a model for how active LDS members and their like-minded neighbors can actually begin to remove the religious divide from their personal relationships and friendships. His email was the first thing I read that morning, and tears of joy and gratitude and awe rolled down my cheeks. Remove the religious divide from our personal relationships. Wow, how many wars could be prevented if the majority of humans could do simply that? How much hatred, distrust, and judgment would vanish in our personal as well as global relationships? And how much freer would each of us be to follow in the footsteps of our Christ or our Buddha or our Krishna? No wonder why I was teary at the thought of taking even one small step in that direction. Because I want to live in a world where we are freer to unconditionally love like Jesus. When Chuck called me across the street one morning in January and asked if I would be willing to help him make the Stake Float more inclusive, a community project, I said, "Sure, Chuck." And it follows that I'm thrilled to speak with you today about removing the religious and personal beliefs that divide us. I'm a Catholic. To give you a sense of how Catholic my family is, about 3 years ago, my mother and father were returning from Mass on their 62nd wedding anniversary when their car was T-boned. My father was unharmed, but my mother broke her neck. She spent the last 6 weeks of her life in bed as a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down. I had the honor of caring for her during that time. She was a person steeped in the Catholic faith, and during that time, she was filled with an unbelievable amount of grace. She was not frightened or angry or demanding. She was unbounded in her love. Also during that time, several priests, truly friends of the family, came from out of state and offered Mass in our home, an unusual occurrence that bends the rules about where Mass can be performed. When Pope Francis visited New York City, one of those priests, Father Dave Dyer, emceed his visit. But returning to my spiritual beginnings, it was my mother who first instilled in me the importance of respecting my neighbor's religions. She was a firm believer in Vatican II. Conveyed in 1959, Vatican II was the second assembly of over 5,000 Roman Catholic religious leaders, and it set a new doctrine. The basic theme that emerged from Vatican II was reconciliation. In keeping with this theme, reconciliation, Vatican II set new rules which allowed for Catholics to pray with other Christians, encouraged friendships across all faiths, Christian and non-Christian, and allowed the Mass to be performed in other languages besides Latin. It took 1,959 years for the Catholic Church to encourage friendships across all religions. I hope this sacrament meeting is an indicator that it won't take the LDS Church that long. Vatican II took to heart and put into action the words Christ gave us through St. John's Gospel. "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another." That's 13:34. As Christ washed his apostles' feet the evening before his crucifixion, Holy Thursday, Jesus tells us that our love for one another will be what marks us as his disciples. He doesn't qualify this love. He didn't say that you also love Christians, or that you also love Jews, or non-believers, or Buddhists. He just leaves us with this unqualified message that you also love one another. This got shortened by my mother to simply love one another. Because of my mother and her devotion to Christ's teachings, it makes sense that when Chuck called me across the street one morning and asked me to help him build the stake float, and then he asked me to be on the committee to design the float, and then he asked me to come to the first organizational meeting for the stake float builders, and then he asked me to carve a quarry out of giant blocks of styrofoam that filled shop vac after shop vac with millions of pills of that nasty greenhouse gas producing stuff. I said, yes, Chuck, yes. And I kept saying yes, six nights a week in near 100-degree weather out of love. Now, it's easy to say yes to Chuck and Elaine. I moved to the house across the street from them 2 years ago from Maine, where I'd lived for nearly 20 years. I've been blessed by their generosity, support, and kindness. But here's the miracle of the Avenues float. Of course, I said yes unconditionally to Chuck and Elaine, but more deeply, I had to say yes to an unconditional love because I had to overcome my fears about my LDS ward. And even scarier, my LDS stake. I didn't even know what a stake was until that fateful morning. And to be honest, I'd heard many a horror story from my non-Mormon friends in Salt Lake about LDS churchgoers. Common complaints were, I lived here for 5 years and never got invited to one of their parties. Or my kids were never invited to their house to play. Or worse, they'll be nice to your face, but at the end of the day, they'll shun you every time. I categorize these complaints under the banner of fear of being banished, fear of being kicked out of the group. It's thought to be one of the oldest fears that lurks deep in our reptilian brains, because back when we roamed the earth in tribes, being banished meant certain death. Now, when we believe we're being banished, it doesn't mean we'll die, but it feels awful and scary and makes us want to protect ourselves. But these complaints also struck me as prejudiced. Certainly, I knew Mormons who did not shun me, and quite to the contrary, were there when I needed them. And yet, it is true that most wards keep to themselves and don't include the greater community in their projects to help the homeless, or their outreach to sick neighbors, or their float building. And there is a way in which the Days of 47 parade has been and is exclusionary. So I had to overcome my fear that my contribution to the float would not be welcomed and that my neighbors might shun me. I am so glad that God gave me that grace because my neighbors showed up to work beside me without any judgment, and I believe with love in their hearts. At first glance, if you don't know me, you might think, why not? She seems nice enough. Big deal. She's Catholic. At least she's a Christian. But you see, I'm not your typical kind of Christian woman. The dress I'm wearing today is one of two dresses that I own. Underneath this white blouse, I am covering my tattoos of lotus flowers and Buddhist wisdom knot and a Chinese symbol for dance, because in addition to being Catholic, I am also a student of Buddhism and yogic meditation. My late partner, who was bedridden for the last 9 months of her life and whom I also cared for, died at 50 from breast cancer. In fact, I am the kind of woman that would likely not be welcome in most LDS churches in Utah, certainly not to speak. And this is the miracle of the Avenues community float. In spite of the difference that I represent, I was not only a welcomed contributor, but a celebrated member of our float team. One of my favorite examples of this occurred at our neighborhood breakfast. I was all sparkly and clean in my capris, freshly showered and moisturized, and volunteering at the beverage table. I was already happy, and then I think it was Nancy Pickett came up and greeted me, "Regina, where are your power tools?" I'm not sure what prejudices, if any, my float building friends had to overcome in order to work steadfastly by my side. I'm not sure what challenges I present to you today. I can only speak to how I overcame my fear and prejudice, in fact, how I overcome any great obstacle or rise to the occasion of any great challenge. What I do when called to a great challenge is I trust, for instance, that if God calls me, along with a bunch of Mormons, to build a float designed especially to celebrate inclusivity, there must be a reason. And I trust that I'll be given the grace, through the Holy Spirit, that I need, that we need, to handle whatever arises. In St. John's Gospel, Jesus assures us that while he is leaving us, the Holy Spirit will be sent to help us. Because we're human, because we're fallible, because our hearts have not broken open enough yet, sometimes we fail to receive that grace. And then there is heartbreak. Maybe heartbreak happens until we break open to the Holy Spirit. But honestly, in terms of the float, there wasn't much heartache. God made it pretty easy to be graceful. And honestly, our communion in God's grace redoubled every turn. Anyone could feel the miracle of that grace at work in that filthy warehouse shop. Anyone could see the amount of care and love we put into our float. If there was an award for best flowers, we would have won not one plaque, but two plaques. Our float was painted, sparkled, and appliqued with every color in the rainbow. It carried the oldest Japanese-American couple who still reside in the avenues, who were once told in the 50s that they could not buy a home in our neighborhood, although they'd more than qualified for the loan. It carried our tireless volunteers, Diane and Amy Jo. At our post-parade party, when Amy Jo saw a picture of her and her mom on the float, she gave her mom a big hug. It carried Douglas Tilton and Daniel Gaffin family. It carried the Fernando family from the Philippines and the newlyweds CJ and Ozzie Kirkley. The float carried a whole lot of joy and some corn to boot. That dang float was so awesome that the professional float builders, the guys who actually get paid a bunch of money to design and build floats, are going to take all of it and reuse it for a Christmas village. My heck, that float was even recyclable and had solar panels. On the back of our float was a big, big, sparkly sign that proudly read, "The Avenues Community." Remembering St. John's Gospel and Jesus' lesson to us on Holy Thursday, secretly one afternoon when I was working alone in the shop, I left my mark on the back of that sign. Under the paint, if you look carefully, you'll see, "Thank you, God, we made this for you."
That's a beautiful talk.
Thanks.
We could end the podcast right here. Regina, on behalf of all our listeners, that was beautiful.
Thank you.
And I just imagine all of our listeners sitting in a Mormon congregation, we kind of seeing you up there give that talk with Chuck just smiling in the background. I'll bet Chuck just had this big, huge smile on his face the whole time. I looked at Chuck while you're giving that talk, and he's had a big smile on his face the whole time. And I would think that was a payday for Chuck to see you shine and to see you be able to bring such beautiful doctrine and teach such beautiful truths as part of that talk. It was really lovely for me personally to hear that.
Thank you.
And thanks for being so honest. I love you talking about your tats. I love you talking about your partner, your dear partner that died of breast cancer and being at her side. And I love you just sharing all these beautiful parts about your life. Chuck, we have about 10 minutes left in this podcast, so I probably don't have time to go through your whole talk. But
it's actually three and a half minutes.
Oh, you gave all the time to other people.
Yeah.
Well, let's have you give your talk.
I could do it if you'd like.
And then I'd love to have you give your thoughts on how you felt about this meeting.
Okay.
After your talk. So we're going out of order, listeners. Chuck is actually the first speaker, but he's going after Regina.
I've heard it said that there are two kinds of people in the world, those who divide the world into two kinds of people and those that don't. Divisions between people today in our world, nation, and community have become extraordinarily acute. We're all painfully aware of these. I'll touch on only one of them here. Deeply ingrained in the cultural psyche of multi-generational Latter-day Saints like me, and perhaps like some of you, are the conceptual divisions between members, less active members, and non-members. However, Jesus acknowledged no such divisions in his day when he conversed with the Samaritan woman at Jacob's well, or dined with the publicans and sinners, when he healed the centurion's son, when he accepted the reverent anointing of a fallen woman, and when he honored the desperate pleadings of a Canaanite mother. Moreover, his parable of the Good Samaritan taught that we must consider those not of our faith to be our neighbors and the focus of our desires and efforts to keep the second great commandment. Very little of all we do as Latter-day Saint communities cannot include our neighbors. Ward parties can become block parties, stake welfare assignments can become neighborhood service projects, and stake float assignments can become community floats. With the goal to bring the Avenues community together in a completely inclusive effort, the Avenues community float exceeded our expectations. 6 of 10 planning committee members were neighbors. 30 to 40% of over 100 individual float building volunteers were neighbors. 6 of 11 Avenues residents riding on the float were neighbors. While I could share many stories of divides bridged, lives touched, understanding deepened, and even heart wounds healed, time permits only 3. One neighbor said, quote, "I have tried to volunteer for other community projects where I did not feel needed. The float was different. They welcomed me warmly and put me right to work glittering," close quote. She found working with others on the float to be meaningful, and she returned again and again. Another, sharing some very personal and touching feelings, said, quote, "I grew up in Holiday and had only 2 friends because I was not Mormon. I felt very excluded and have felt hurt ever since. But being included in this float project has been very healing for me," close quote. And finally, there's the story of Ray and Yo Uno, neighbors who have lived in the Avenues for over 50 years and raised their family there. Until this year, they had not been to the Days of 47 parade since their children were young. Ray said, quote, "Although this was our first experience with the parade in a very long time, we were not expecting any surprises, but the reaction of the people to us as float riders was unexpectedly heartwarming. Everyone responded to us so kindly and with great friendliness. We had never experienced this before," close quote. His wife, Yo, summed up their experience by describing how much the community has changed in the last 50 to 60 years. Quote, "When Ray wanted to move into the Avenues in 1958 as a member of the Japanese American minority, he was required to first get the approval of all the neighbors. When we married and settled in the Avenues in 1966, we were not totally accepted, but now, in 2018, we are sitting on a float in the Days of 47 parade." That is a big change.
Wow.
Close quote. Together as a community of Latter-day Saints and neighbors, we thank President Scott Pickett of the Salt Lake Immigration Stake and the Days of 47 parade organizers for enabling this experiment. And we thank our Heavenly Father for directing this precious practicum in the arts of unconditional love, acceptance, and inclusion. We collectively experienced a miracle, a brief but resplendent glimpse of a Zion society, a cherished piece of heaven.
Well, I have tears in my eyes again, both with Regina and Chuck's talks. What a beautiful talk. I love what you taught about Christ's ministry. I love those examples, personalizing with that holiday woman, that Japanese family, And I love the word you used, healing. As you two know, there's a lot of pain in our community. There's a lot of division. There's a lot of us versus them, and feeling that for us to stand for our beliefs or our values, we sort of need to take on other people to do that. And I think you're teaching us that we don't need to do that. We can stand for who we are and what we believe. And part of all of that is being kind of inclusive. And both of you talked about Christ's ministry to do that. You didn't make up stuff to sort of fit what you wanted to communicate. You used the doctrine of Christ in your talks to talk about how we do this. That's one of the things I love about what we're trying to do, is to bring understanding and kindness, and it's part of the commandments of love one another. But just like I think has happened for you, as I've reached out to people that are out of my circle, I find that they're often helping me be a better Christian, and they're teaching me things that people sort of in my own circle maybe aren't able to teach me. And so I think that's part of my journey as a Christian, is to have people from all walks of life and what I can learn from them. It's part of what the parable of the Good Samaritan teaches me. I just hope our listeners can feel the Spirit. We started with prayer before we started the podcast, and we asked the Spirit to be here. And we hope that thoughts come into all of your minds using the example of Regina and Chuck and what you can do in your congregation, in your circles. And we may not all be able to build a float. And I love the visual imagery of a float going down the 49, going down the parade. But think of the individual floats. Some of them may not be physical, but what we can do in our communities and what we can do. I love some of the things that you talked about, Chuck, of instead of making it a ward service project, a neighborhood service project. And just some of the wording you use there to think about how we can serve together and not use that as a community opportunity. But let's just live. We're kind of coming to the end. I'd love to have Regina share any last thoughts, and then let Chuck share any last thoughts.
Well, as I did mention, I came out when I was 22. That was in 1982.
And you were living where?
I was living in Boulder.
Okay.
And when I first told my parents, they said, "We will never speak of this." And they didn't want me around much then. And it was very painful, but I believed something that I was told by my parents always growing up. Other people may come and go, but you're always going to have your family. And I had a sort of deep belief in that, and I kind of held their feet to the fire on that. And I kept showing up at all the family events, and I kept showing up with love, even when it wasn't easy. And sometimes I would show up with less tolerance.
Sure.
But eventually, over time, they came to understand that I was no different than their other children. And in fact, a priest and a nun actually helped to open their eyes to this. And then, of course, when Ellen died and I was taking care of her, they came to visit numbers of times.
And they were. And Ellen's your partner, your mother.
Ellen was my late partner, yes. Okay. And she was very sick. She was in bed for 9 months, but I did not want her in the hospital. She died in our home. But my parents came several times during that, and my sisters came. And if there was ever any doubt that my love for my partner was any different than my parents' love for each other or my sister's love for their husband, there was no doubt left after they saw me caring for her as she left, as she went to God. And we have we have a beautiful and blessed relationship. And sometimes it takes time, and you have to keep praying for strength and praying for understanding and praying for forgiveness.
It's really wonderful, Regina. And I'm thinking about all the LDS LGBTQ people that may not be close with their families, and what you have been able to do, and then how you all came together because of your great courage. So I think you give our listeners courage to want to be able to do what you've done and have the beautiful fruits of a wonderful family relationship that you have. What a wonderful way to close. Thank you, Regina.
Thank you, Richard.
Chuck, any concluding thoughts? You're a gem, Chuck.
He is.
Wish we could clone you and put you everywhere. Your dear wife.
I have a dear friend, gay man, married to his partner in California. And they were in the process of trying to get married during Proposition 8. He was in town during that period, and we're work colleagues, and he came into my office one day and closed the door and said, "How can you possibly belong to a church that treats me this way?" And I felt prompted, I felt inspiration to say to him the same thing that I had mentioned to Regina. "Dennis, I love you. You're my friend. And I love Bob, your husband. But I also love my church. And I don't think I have to choose. I can continue to love you, and I can continue to love my faith and be loyal, even though I may not agree with everything." And for me, that's been the key. I'm not a church leader. I'm not one of the Quorum of 12 or one of the Quorum of First Presidency. It's not my responsibility to articulate and defend church doctrine. My job is to follow Christ. And Christ showed us abundantly that his job was to love everyone, regardless of their ethnic background, their beliefs, their compliance with his commandments. The only people he ever really criticized were the people who pretended to be faithful but were hypocrites, the corrupt church leaders of his time. I don't think we have that today. I love our church leaders. Sometimes I disagree, but I support them and sustain them. But I love my friends of other faiths, and particularly I love my LGBTQ friends. They have helped me to overcome my unconscious biases and to see in their lives great examples of love and patience. They are much more patient than I am in waiting for the world to change. That's Regina's greatest gift to me.
I'm just so touched by both of your concluding comments. Thank you so much. There's so much for our listeners. I bet they will listen to this podcast a couple times. I love what you said, Chuck, about loyalty. You can be loyal to both. And so many active LDS people I talk with are conflicted. And the way you teach in this example, they don't need to be conflicted. They can be loyal to the church and loyal to everybody. And I love what you said to that gay couple that walked into your office in that moment of tension. That was a perfect answer. It's a perfect answer. I'd like to give a shout out to my friend Joe Horton. Joe and I are at the sports mall together, and we've talked about our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, and somehow he became aware of this story and emailed me one day. So, Joe, thank you for connecting me with Chuck and Regina so we could do this podcast. Thanks to Tom, our producer, who worked so hard to publish these podcasts, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.